The Keanu Review. Keanu, we gonna creep on you. From your B-list to your realist, for eons do you know what Neo knew? And can you be Kung Fu? Or are you Ted when he said party on dudes? I know it's beyond you that you could be untrue. Whether at Point Break, Speed, or Neon Demon Blue, we got a brief on you. Don't put the tea on you. We drinking cognac for the podcast of Keanu.
Are listening to the Keanu Review. We are hacking into the film and television career of Keanu Reeves. Get your VCRs ready, because with me is Regina Connolly.
Hello.
Bob Shields.
We're coming at you low-tech style.
I'm Robin Hitchcock, and today we have a special guest who, it occurs to me, I don't know his last name.
It's a mystery.
But please welcome David.
Hello.
Regina and Bob's brother-in-law.
Jack me into the mainframe.
Thanks for doing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks. So, David, you work with computers.
Accurate.
Do you interface with them using MIME?
Occasionally. Don't we all? In fact, MIME types, of course, define application payloads on web pages. No, I usually wave my hands at them, but it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This might sound obscure, because we haven't mentioned which movie we're reviewing yet.
Here in 2021.
Which is Johnny Mnemonic from 1995, but set in January of 2021, which it currently is,
yeah,
as we record.
And honestly, I mean, pretty close to reality.
Yeah, it starts with a pandemic, starts with riots in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Corporations with too much power.
The biggest problem is information overload.
Whoa.
Very prescient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except for people still have VCRs. And payphones.
Yeah. I did think when I saw him using a payphone, like keypad, I was like, oh, those are going to be things that people aren't familiar with anymore.
Right. Because, they look future tech now.
Because phones are never going to have those kind of buttons again, I don't think. So it made me feel like that is going to go the way of the modem song, which is soon it will be not a thing people are familiar with.
So have we prepared one woe reviews?
I believe.
Whoa. I think that awkward silence is kind of my woe.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Whoa?
I genuinely don't know if this movie is so bad it's good or just bad.
I think it's quite bad.
I think
it's undeniably bad.
Well, hold on. I'm like, David, do you like this movie?
So I used to show this movie, or I think parts of it, because showing it all to my 11th grade students might have been a mistake. when I was a computer networking teacher in a high school in Baltimore, Maryland, and I have a very fond memory of it for that reason. And I think it does touch on some important cyberpunk themes and data storage concerns, frankly, that I think really are woven together. And the fact that the screenplay was written by Gibson, by the short stories author, I think gives it some weight. But as a movie, that's not very good. As a story, I think it's very compelling.
I feel like that's like my biggest point about, or my biggest takeaway from this movie is that I feel like you can tell that it is written by an author of stories and not by a screenwriter. Because I think that so much of the movie, the action is completely separate from the dialogue. So I would argue there are two scenes in this movie that I think are genuinely good. And that is the scene where the woman Jane, who's a bodyguard, is like talking to a guy who's kind of like in charge of getting jobs.
He's a fixer.
He's a fixer. And she like goes and sort of like disarms his bodyguard, who she has said is older. And she's like, you need me. I need a job. Like, hire me. And he's like, just hold your hand out. And like, just hold it there as long as you can. And I feel like that's one of the few times where what they're saying and what they're doing actually like line up, but that there's also things that you pick up just by watching it. And there's like tension in the scene. Whereas most of the movie is, here's some exposition, here's some awkward action, here's some exposition, and they're not really related.
Right.
And the other scene, I know we haven't even summarized it, but I'm just getting into it. The other scene that I'm like, this is really good, is when one of the bad guys from the opening like action sequence comes to Newark and is meeting with Takahashi.
The free city of Newark.
The free city of Newark. And it's like, these are the bad guys. And they're speaking Japanese. And then the one bad guy is like, your Japanese is terrible. Like, speak to me in English. And I feel like you learn from this scene that the one guy's more important, that there's a power struggle in play. Anyway, I just feel like that scene, I was like, what's actually happening is interesting to watch. But the rest of the movie is mostly disconnected and weird.
The other scene I would add that I thought was good was Keanu Reeves freaking out about his loss of status mm-hmm. and luxury.
That was, I think, one of my favorite scenes.
I want room service?
Yeah, yeah, I want room service.
I want someone to do that monologue at an audition.
I feel like that monologue is something that some people would point to and be like, Keanu Reeves is terrible. And I would point to and say, look at this genius walking among us. I thought that monologue was great. I thought he did such a good job with
passion,
it.
You know, seconded only by Henry Rollins' passion in his information overload scene.
Right.
But I thought that the I Want Room Service scene was really well framed by the car dropping at the beginning. It kind of set up a lot of stressful energy to let that be an outburst of this otherwise kind of emotionally repressed character.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yep, so those are the three good scenes of the entire movie. Mm-hmm. Thanks for tuning in. I don't want to walk within 10 miles of trying to do the plot summary myself. Do either of you want to kind of walk us through it?
I mean, how much of it needs to be summarized? Maybe I feel like we should maybe ask David to start because you have the most understanding of the cyberpunk context.
Sure. So this movie is based on a short story by William Gibson called Johnny Mnemonic in the collection Burning Chrome. And the core conceit follows through from the short story, although Gibson added a lot more. But it starts with Johnny, our friend Keanu, as a courier of data, which has to be downloaded into his brain and somehow intermingled there in a somewhat dangerous way. And this is being used to pilfer secrets away from a mega corporation against the wishes of that corporation and the Yakuza, all the way from Beijing to Newark. But it's too much information, and his head is going to leak and hurt, and it's a sad thing, and this is somehow also paralleled by the global information overload pandemic, which is giving everybody the shakes.
NAS, neural attenuation syndrome.
Yes, the black shakes.
Which, is that what people think 5G is going to do to them?
I think
is that
that's
oh,
what people
maybe,
are
yeah.
saying, 5G.
Either that or turn you gay.
Mm-hmm.
How come they... Robin, when did Illmatic come out?
What's Illmatic?
Like, 94?
They
like,
should have used it, that's all.
Mm-hmm. But instead, they had the musical talents of Henry Rollins and Ice-T. As cameo, well, as major actors who didn't do much singing. I think some Rollins music was in there.
Okay.
So the big plot is trying to get this information to the buyers who turn out to be an underground of kind of anti-big tech folks who are trying
they're
to...
They're called low-techs.
They're called low-techs, yep. In fact.
But they're not... That's a kind of misleading name because they have tons of technology. They just... They're like anti-corporate technology.
I think they're low-tech in that the technology that they have is stolen. They're basically...
It's decentralized.
Yeah. They don't have like the wealth behind it. It's a bunch of stuff that they've cobbled together, including a big reveal at the end that I will not spoil now.
Yeah. Is this a good level of summary? Am I going to...
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
You're doing great.
Yeah.
You're
doing so much better than we normally do.
Yeah. We so, have so many tangents.
Yeah. The fixer scene that's been alluded to, I think really matches what's in the original short story, but... involves Johnny confronting his information broker, his buyer, and being upset that he's been given a brain full of trouble and that the Yakuza is after him. Also, the Yakuza include a man with a thumb weapon attached by a monofilament thread to cut people's heads off, which is portrayed as a glowing strand of energy whipping out.
Yeah.
That was another thing that in the power play scene between this guy and Takahashi, where he just makes one line that I'm like, is memorable, and they don't go into it, but he's like, I see that you've made your shame a strength. So there's like something embarrassing about like his thumb being cut off or short, and that he's like instead put this weapon there. But I was like, I like that they didn't explain it, and that weird weapon was...
He's got a weaponized toe thumb.
Yeah, which made it through from the short story.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, so this confrontation scene happens, and then totally different movie from the story they're on, where they go on a mad chase because the bad guys want to take off Johnny's head to reload the stolen data, which is the cure for this disease, into the corporate servers, and the rest of our crew is trying to get it away. Turns out to the people who will distribute it to the world, the low-techs, through a series of connections, Ice-T is the leader of the low-techs. Henry Rollins is the doctor associated with this underground movement. Madcap car chase. No, it's not a car chase. The car drops on a car at some point.
Yes, they have weaponized Volkswagen Beetles.
While being chased by Dolph Lundgren playing Cyborg Jesus.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
And doing the most acting that he did in the entire decade of the 1980s.
Very passionate, if you'll pardon the expression.
He really is trying, which is not usual for him. And I love him. I think he's a really cool dude. And I'm happy to see him doing his best work.
You know that he's bad because he carries around what looks like a Bowie knife, but is actually, the handle is a crucifix. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's the real juxtaposition and character explanation for that guy. Yeah.
And so ultimately, they figure out that they need to get this out of his head without killing him because it can cure everybody who's suffering from this pandemic. So they run away from Dolph Lundgren up to a broken section of a bridge. Is it a particular bridge or is it a made-up? I'm not from the New York...
It looks like the Verrazano Bridge, but it could be any one of the suspension bridges connecting.
But this place called Heaven contains all of their rebel architecture, and an individual named Jones, who used to work for the Navy, turns out to be a dolphin with cyborg implants.
Also
from the short story.
Nice.
Yeah, so you bring it back around there.
Yeah.
Like an actual dolphin.
A big
aquatic mammal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's got a microwave laser and very good sensors for downloading information.
And infrasound.
Like dolphins do.
They have the capacity. They use all of their brain. I guess the missing thing is he can't get this information. Johnny can't get this information out of his brain because there are three mnemonic cues, if you will. Three stills from the TV that was playing at the moment the information was downloaded. He's only got one of them. The bad guys have the other. The third is lost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they have to patch this information together and go into his own brain, culminating in a super cyberspace fighting scene.
The technical term is hack your own brain and loop it through Jones.
Loop it through Jones. Ice-T gets to say this at least once, and then it gets repeated in kind of an echoey, montage-y way.
Yeah. And there's a ghost in the shell.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman who, when she died, was uploaded into the mainframe of the PharmaCorp Corporation, mm-hmm. and she helps him hack his brain for the final image, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And she's been kind of a ghost pushing the current leader of PharmaCorp, Takahashi,
mm-hmm.
a very nice actor. Is it Takeshi who's that actor?
Yes.
And has been kind of encouraging him to give up his corporate ways and, you know, mm-hmm. allow this information to be free and downloaded by wideband over VCRs. so that everyone can be free. The cyber battle at the end, where this finally happens, is a lot like Lawnmower Man.
Mm-hmm. Very like Lawnmower Man, yes.
With a lot of the... This is audio, so you can't see me waving my arms around, but...
Yeah.
A bit of that.
And that's pretty much it. Yeah, and then against they save the day, yeah.
They save the day. Keanu survives, although the whole movie it's been like he's going to die. Mm-hmm. And the lady who became his bodyguard through happenstance, and he kiss and seem to be together.
Right. Because when you hire someone as your bodyguard, and you both suffer from degenerative neural conditions, that's what happens.
Yes.
Right?
Quick aside, Dolph Lundgren was a Fulbright scholar at MIT when Grace Jones saw him at a bar and said, hey, be my bodyguard. And then later, they started to fuck. So it's real. It's real.
Yeah, it's a real known phenomenon.
Possibly the most realistic portion of this film. Also, there is a moment where I feel bad. What is the guy's name who's hunting him that's not...
Thumb Guy?
Yeah, Thumb Guy. We'll just call him Thumb Guy.
I don't think he's given a name.
So there's a battle between Thumb Guy and Keanu where Keanu manages to cut his head off with his thumb weapon.
He looped it back around.
He looped it around his head and he fell into the river.
The brain. Yeah. Loved it.
Yep, it's great.
I think the other combat moment that stands out is with Dolph Lundgren. I think the only cinematic moment at the very end, he's fried by the microwave laser.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead. They're in the aftermath scene, people are doing their final speeches, and you see his charred corpse raising up a hand, lifting its head, and then you see that he's being winched up as a corpse, and Ice-T says, get that trash out of here, and throws White Jesus into the river.
Yeah.
That's the most satisfying part of the whole movie to me.
Yeah.
That gave me a really good moment.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like that moment kind of, again, captured a thing that I think is an issue with this movie, is that I think the violence in it is sometimes, like, grotesque, or like, I feel like the tone between the violence and then what's happening, I'm like, are you doing this like a comedically gross thing, or is this supposed to be serious? Like, at some point, Robot Jesus is torturing the bartender to get Jane's name, and he like crushes the guy's like metal hand, and you see like bloody pulp coming out of it, and then he holds that giant crucifix knife up to his face, and the guy who's being tortured for information is very much like, oh, come on, man, come on, what am I gonna say?
And why'd you have to do that, he says after he puts his hand in liquid nitrogen and crushes
it. He like holds the knife to his genitals, and the guy, again, it feels like, I'm like, is this slapstick? Or is this supposed to be genuinely upsetting? And I feel like the movie doesn't decide, and that there are like hints of that throughout. Like, we were talking on the bridge scene, they drop a car mm-hmm. onto one of the bad guys on the ground in a way that's like, oh, like, isn't this funny? And then the woman who's his partner is like genuinely upset, and
you feel more for the wronged henchman who lost her partner yeah. than you do for the seeming good guys who also get killed later on.
Well, I thought they were a nice foil, and there were a few moments throughout that I think they were often, you know, either mm-hmm. the bartender or these lower ranks folks in the low techs
yeah.
who had that kind of Shakespearean, mm-hmm. you know, fool character, the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern role.
Yeah,
that I think
yeah.
made the violence more poignant.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a fairly
yeah.
strong move.
The other problem this movie has is it is really not funny in the parts where it's trying to be funny.
Wait, when does it try to be funny?
So there are a couple of what are apparently, it seemed like they're supposed to be like pithy lines of dialogue.
Yeah, they're almost unmemorable to me, but I remember right. noticing that they happened.
So like mm-hmm. jokes?
Next time knock on the bathroom.
Next time knock. Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. There's that. There's mm-hmm. also when Keanu shows up for his clients and they all point guns at him. He holds his briefcase up and says, anchovies, extra cheese, or something like that.
Right, yeah, yeah. Right. That felt like a different movie.
Yeah, and it just does not land at all. It's really jarring, and it's just tastelessly unfunny. It's very odd.
I found that whole opening sequence of Johnny arriving and the people around him who were like, they're so stressed because we know that they're, mm-hmm. like Johnny's like, you're not like my usual clients. And they're all freaking out because we've learned later that they have stolen this information from PharmaCorp. And then mm-hmm. Thumb Guy comes in and murders all of them. That whole scene, I just think the acting in it is abysmal. Like, that would be my Keanu no,
right.
is the anchovies line. Like, it's
That's
everything
fair.
In
Same.
That scene is wooden and jittery in a way that mm-hmm. I was like, oh God, is this the whole movie?
And also,
I wonder how much Gibson had to do with that, or whether the producers were pushing back and yeah. kind of saying, we need this to be a little bit of a...
But also, like, I think the premise of that scene is really interesting.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, yeah.
you've got these people who are essentially nerds trying to
right.
do the right thing.
They're the PharmaCorp scientists.
And they're in a huge amount of danger mm-hmm. because of it. So like that premise and like them being jittery and nervous and being out of their depth is really interesting, but the tone of the scene is really off.
Yeah, or all over the place.
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
I will say the only part of that scene that I like, and it's not my key Keanu, but it is, I think, like a good Keanu moment, is so he has too much data in his head
mm-hmm.
and then his nose is bleeding and then
Classic
he goes
trope.
Into the bathroom mm-hmm. and does some Tai Chi, I believe,
yep.
and, like bringing his energy. But the way before that, he like walks in and like splays his whole body out like in front of the sink, like, I'm in pain. And you can see it radiate from his little tiny fingertips mm-hmm. to his little tiny toes, and it's adorable.
He does a lot of teeth work in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He does.
Yeah,
I know you're a very mouth-focused actor.
Yeah.
Or
oh,
actor.
I was going to bring it up. Mm-hmm. I was like, I feel like there's more tension in his jaw than in most of the scenes in this movie because they cover up his beautiful face with VR goggles and you just
right.
see him clenching his teeth, and that's a lot of the action. But I will
like,
say my
all
key
the time.
Keanu is he at some point is trying to get information about the facts so that he can get stuff out
mm-hmm.
of his head. So he like breaks into essentially a fancy Radio Shack and builds a computer out of widgets. And it's like there are two gloves and a VR helmet, but he's just miming. And the way that he's typing and like opening things,
mm-hmm.
like I think he's a good physical actor. And I'm sorry
yeah.
to the two people who know a lot about computers next to me, but I thought that looked cool. I thought his physicality was neat.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not how computers work, but that was the most like, I'm into this.
Pretty close.
I especially like when he mimed being a bear when he threatened the other person
oh, yeah.
on the phone.
And the claws emerged in VR.
Yep.
Fairly accurate. That's how I use computers. That's definitely one of the things I showed to my kids.
Right? Yep.
That and the 320 gigabytes thing. We
oh, yeah,
this, which
yeah.
gets
right.
into how dated different parts of it are.
Yes.
So I'll save that for that segment.
Oh, yeah. But, well, let's do that segment. Let's do what
yeah.
the Rufus moments of this movie are numerous and frequent.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so Rufus is our segment where we talk about anachronistic moments in movies. And normally it's like, oh, this movie was made in 1994. How was the world different in 1994? But this movie is made in 1994, but looking forward to the
mm-hmm.
current moment. So we are uniquely positioned to judge it, and we will.
Oh, yes.
My number one, because honestly, it's the whole movie, but I just
Everything.
Thought this was adorable. At some point, Jane throws a pink hand grenade into the computer room,
mm-hmm.
and she
fun.
Has a troll doll key ring on her hand grenade.
Aw.
Wow. I missed that.
I missed that detail.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was like, whoo, troll dolls, that's the 90s.
Yeah, I think for me, certainly the storage amounts that, you know, were impossibly large and kind of just science fiction-y numbers for folks in 1995, talking about doubling gigabytes? Your stuff from 80 to 160 and then being overloaded with 320 gigabytes is now a number that all of us can conceive. Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a, it's a well-rendered movie on your, you know, thumb drive now.
Exactly.
And not a thing that won't fit in a human brain.
Right.
So I think that's my number one Rufus.
I think my number one Rufus is the premise. The premise only works if the internet isn't what you think it is, which is that, that you can send and store enormous amounts of data securely and secretly. And so in this movie, like, you have to store things inside people's brains and then send them on a plane to a person to move a large amount of data. And the internet is just for video phone calls. Whereas what the internet turned out to actually be for was exactly what this movie is, the premise of this movie is for. So it's a, it's an interesting, it's an interesting thing that, like, they tried to predict what the internet was going to be, and literally the opening title card says Internet 2021, but the internet they know or they predicted was not actually what the internet turned out to be.
They still rely a lot on fax machines and VCRs.
Yes.
I have an inverted Rufus, which is this movie did a surprisingly good job of predicting makeup fashion.
I wanted to talk
they
about
have
that. Yeah. Me too.
Strong eyebrows and cheekbones drawn on their faces. And I honestly, the one henchwoman lady who is in that scene where they test Jane, I want to try that makeup look tonight.
I thought the makeup throughout was excellent, not just the stylized like cyberpunk makeup, but like Keanu getting increasingly unwell was, I feel like that is often overdone in movies, but I thought the
like
way that
Tombstone.
They did like... like what?
Like in Tombstone.
Like Tombstone. Yeah, by the time Val Kilmer is a wet gray rag, I'm like, you've done a bit much. But the gentle reddening of, like, his waterline, I was like, that was really... The only time I would say it wasn't good is when Takahashi, you think he's dead, and then he pops up like a wet gray rag. And I was like, that is... That's not true. But speaking of him, the other Rufus thing I wanted to bring up in this movie, especially with, like, the Yakuza being the big bad guys, I felt like because it's the mid-90s, it feels very much the peak, like, America is afraid of Japan moment. Like, the Michael Crichton, like, books about, like, oh god, we gotta watch out, their economy is so strong. So there was something about that as, like, them as the enemy that felt very dated to me.
I think also the memories that emerged for Johnny as he got his memories back, as the information was cleared from his mind, the image of the idyllic childhood wouldn't play well today.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it was a very kind of affluent, you know.
Yeah, did he grow up
ruffles
in,
and
did he grow up in Professor X's mansion?
Yeah.
bicycle. Yeah. I thought maybe he grew up in an orphanage because there were so many kids. I was like, wait, is this like Joe's house from
Little Boys? I
thought
it was a rich birthday party.
Oh, that could be it too.
Yeah.
It looks like an entirely different movie. Like, I stepped outside and came back and I was like, did the movie end? And did it autoplay onto the next thing? And I was like, oh, no, he's just remembering his childhood.
Yeah. So speaking of Rufus stuff and things looking different, I'm curious what everyone's thoughts were about the way that they did the data visualization, like animation sequences, both when he's hacking and then at the end when he's hacking his own brain before looping it through Jones. Because I feel like Bob and I had very different reactions to it, so I'm curious how other people felt about this. Those
I'm
like
okay with it. Like, you know, we referenced how the one fight scene, is that what you're talking about also?
Yeah.
Looks like One More Man, but not as good. And then the rifling through his own brain files looks like Hackers, but not as good. And I feel like the insistence on demonstrating cyberspace as an actual space, obviously I understand why movies do that, but this is a great example of why bother.
Well, I think you stumble on an interesting point there, which is like trying to render the internet as a cinematic space is something that movies still haven't figured out how to do well.
Except for Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Right, but then, but that's still like, that's just Toy Story in the computer, right? It's like...
Right, but that's the way to do it, right? Like, it's kind of like, if you need to tell this serious story that needs to represent the internet as a physical space, you gotta make it a little less serious.
Right, and even the classic Jurassic Park visualization of the file system, this is a Unix system, I know this, has its roots in this genre where you are jacking into a matrix and being embodied in a space.
Yeah.
And I think for representing that cyberpunk idea, it achieves it well.
Yeah.
It's cartoonish, you're moving boxes around, but it wasn't, you know, over the top where except until the end when he was inside his own brain where there's this whole psychological overlay. I thought it did capture that era's conception of futuristic cyberspace well.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
This story was written in the mid-80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then this screenplay was written in the 90s?
Yeah, I think there was a bit of a resurgence in interest in cyberpunk as a genre through that time.
Right. Obviously, because, you know, in the 80s, it was very, very niche to be involved conceptual. In the internet. And in the 90s, normal people were starting to do it. My question is, did William Gibson pay attention during that decade and adjust his view of what cyberspace was? And, like, did his attitudes change? And is that reflected at all in this screenplay?
Doesn't seem like it. I mean, in the book, they didn't call it the internet, did they? They called it the Matrix.
Yeah.
Right. So that change is reflected in the movie. But other than that, I think conceptually, I don't think he really... I think the early 90s, it was still too early to really properly understand the internet.
When did he write Neuromancer?
Oh, I don't know.
I'll have to look it up.
Because I actually read part of that book because it had such a cool cover and it was on my dad's bookshelf. And I was like, well, I need to know what this is about. And then pretty quickly was like, I don't need to read this.
Yeah.
But I actually was thinking about it the other day because, like, in that book, like, the basic plot is that the main character can't use the Matrix. Like, he's been physically altered, so he can't use the internet. And I was like, with Trump getting kicked off of all these platforms, I'm like, oh, they are doing to Trump what happened to this guy. Wonder if there's any lessons to be learned.
There you go.
Well, I feel like the reason that I really liked the images of him, like, I both liked Keanu's physicality of hacking, but I liked the way the animation was, even if it has no basis in what the internet is actually like, because I think it's so disconnected from a real thing. It feels more like a projection into a fantastical future.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is more as, like, I tend to veer fantasy over sci-fi might be why I found that more appealing. But I actually thought the animation design, like the color choices, the way things were laid out, I thought it had a more distinctive style than honestly a lot of the rest of the movie outside of the makeup. Like, I think that this movie could have been so much more visually interesting and in how it told its story. But I think in terms of, like, iconic, there are very few, like, single frame images from the movie that I'd be like, wow, that's a real, like, visual story that's going on there. And I felt like the internet part was at least, like, cohesive in that part, in that way to me. Like, it was a come together style. Like, the only shot that I think I will remember from the movie is when Jane is, like, she's getting sick and she collapses next to a cellophane wrapped
shop dummy.
So it's like her face is right next to this, like, mannequin face that's, like, under plastic. And I was like, that's an interesting stylistic shot. Like, that's cool. The rest of the movie, I feel like, is very straightforward.
Yeah, and the CGI, I mean, it was still early days of CGI.
CGI cop up.
But, so I will say, in my unprofessional opinion, this movie, like, the CGI in it is fine for what you're saying. Like, it does a good job of, like, making cinematic the idea of cyberspace and information. And the CGI rendering is okay. Like, it's fine. The animation that is driving that CGI is extremely basic. Like, it is like 10 minutes on your PC basic kind of animation. Not a really great showcase. And I understand that the tools back then were far less sophisticated, and so you could do, you know, it took far longer to do far less. And it would be easy for it to give the movie credit on that, but just a minute ago we mentioned Jurassic Park, and this movie was made 3 years after Jurassic Park, 2 years after Jurassic Park.
I think just two, but still.
And 4 years after Terminator 2.
One of the greatest movies ever made, obviously.
Which benefited from practical effects. Well, I guess Terminator 2,
But like, both of those movies have infinitely more sophisticated CGI.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're aided by the fact that they are, it's a composite, so like the CGI is made to match something in the real world.
Right, I think that let them cut the budget on the CGI here.
Sure.
And they put their effects into the practical dolphin, for example, and the car bombs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's fine, absolutely fine, that the CGI was cartoonish.
Oh, yeah.
Because it made it a different space, as Reg said.
But I'm okay with the CGI being that way, but I was like, but the animation itself is super simple and basic, like, in comparison to what was obviously possible at the time.
I have two other cyberpunk questions, if you'll allow.
Sure.
Number one, is the Fifth Element cyberpunk?
Ooh, good question.
No.
Okay.
I would say that's more on the fantasy side of things.
Yeah. And when did that come out? Fantasy sci-fi. Is this around? Is that around the same time?
The same year.
Yeah, 95?
I think so.
I thought it was like 96, 97.
Okay.
Oh, 97. Sorry.
Okay. My tangent question is, why are opera singers featured in this movie? And I guess if Fifth Element is not cyberpunk, it's not a true to the genre, but I'm like, is there something fiction about like a like
I have an answer for this.
At least
the Fifth Element's opera singer was like putting her back into it. And getting him on it, the opera singer could not have given less of a shit.
It's just like
she
a
was
club
on
singer.
Stage.
Right. But I want to hear what I'm saying.
This is why I think that is true. So you know how on Star Trek they talk about Shakespeare a lot?
Yeah.
It's because having culture that has already lasted hundreds of years continue to last hundreds of years makes sense in sci-fi and doesn't set off your bullshit dar. Mm-hmm. The way that if people end up treating like Seinfeld the way that they treat Shakespeare plays in 200 years, if you assert that now, you look like an asshole, even though that may well end up being true.
Okay.
So opera has this baked in authenticity.
And I guess also both of them use, well, at least in Fifth Element, they're using opera to like denote like the division between high class and low class.
Yeah.
Because that is often the divide that it currently feels. But I think in this movie, they're inverting that where it's a sort of, it's a hangout of the low tech people. Maybe.
Right. Well, anyway. It's a lower class bar. It's a dive bar. I think that juxtaposition makes it feel alien while still being recognizable. I think likewise in Star Trek, when you've got Klingon opera or, you know, four-handed piano opera. You know, it has that, I know this, but it doesn't belong here, and so it kind of adds that exoticness to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. A little out.
Well, well solved, team.
I did want to throw in a note about, I'm sorry, I'm just picking on the movie nonstop, but I also think the sound design in it is aggressively bad, because I think all of the sound cues are very obvious. Like, there's a fight scene where Johnny thinks it's the first time he thinks he's going to like deliver his data and be fine, and he's double crossed, and it's when Ice-T is introduced, and it's sort of like when someone gets shot, like imagine a sound you'd think would play in the background when someone gets shot. That's exactly what it is. Like, everything is so predictable, and it only like comes in, they're like, okay, these are scenes that need some I guess like heightening of the feeling that you would already expect to have from what you're seeing. And again, where I just think this movie would have been so much better if it had, like, I don't know, like, style to it, or, like, if the sound design was, like, really elaborate, or, like, took a position on it. I felt like there were just so many ways that this could have been a movie that I'd be all about.
The production values in general are really, like, it has the production values of a Canadian TV show that Netflix would recommend to you. Oh, it really was?
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh, wow. Well, that makes sense then, because it...
Yeah.
Bob is very sensitive to the Commonwealth production values.
but it has the production values of a TV show that Netflix wouldn't recommend to you. Like, you would have to search for it by name to find it. Like, it's very low taste and budget.
But I think the place
yesterday we were surfing Netflix and Colin kept stopping on all these Canadian sci-fi TV shows, and I said, can we watch something that doesn't look miserable? And I like to zero in on that, I was like, can we watch something not shot in Vancouver?
What were you saying?
No offense to our great sister Hollywood to the north.
They're doing really good work there with the Flash and everything else, I'm sure. But I think that the place where it is distinctive, as we've said before, is the low-tech culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got the punk makeup and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's because they found the people in 1990-whatever who already felt that way and were looking forward to, like, I this is my identity, and I just get to dress up and be it on stage. I think including Ice-T and Henry Rollins, they were there for it.
I would say, like, I think the makeup design and the costume design, like, the character design, I think, are good. I just think the rest of the design elements, like the sound or the set or the cinematography, doesn't match that level of care.
Yeah, but I think getting the people who felt cyberpunky in their hearts to inhabit it is what makes it feel distinctive, even more than, you know, they got to put on their own makeup. Lauren, who is Regina's sister, happened to say that she knows people today who still dress that way. So I think that part holds up, as was said, but it's just it's that thread has come through.
Absolutely.
Identity. Yeah.
So for you guys, what were your kind of key Keanu moments?
I think it's I Want Room Service.
I agree. I Want Room for that whole freak out speech.
Yeah.
Is great.
And it was well framed, I think, dramatically as well.
Yeah.
For me, it's you got parents and stuff.
Good.
Because Dedemeyer, come on, if somebody just tells you, yeah, I erased my childhood, why would your follow-up question be, do you got parents and stuff?
That whole, she's annoying. I'm sorry, but they're like running in a tunnel and she's like, what's your life story? Can I ask you about this? Can I ask you about that? And yeah. Keanu is like, you let me sleep and I literally told you that I have hours left to live. What's wrong with you? And then she's like, how about your mom and dad? And he's like, I will kill you. It's, yeah, also, I thought that scene was very
funny. I can see why they get together.
It's amazing to me that Dedemeyer is in this movie and Starship Troopers, our 90s misguided sci-fi queen.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, mine was the hacking. It's the physical hand gestures. I did really like his speech. I like that we're like softening it by saying that I want room service. It's the I want to fuck a $10,000 hooker speech as well. He escalates so quickly from like, I want my shirt to be pressed to,
he's like, I want room service. I want a club sandwich. Buddy, treat yourself.
Aim higher.
Get a steak.
Right?
Well, I think he was just feeling that he was, you know, transported to Newark from Beijing and lost all that and was in this story. Yeah, he should go treat himself.
I think that's a good part of the script, essentially, because I think like Keanu is meant to be the kind of like, he hasn't chosen a side, he's not poor enough to be in the low tax or political enough, but he is trapped because we find out at the beginning that he thinks that he's done enough work to remove the implant so that he can have his memories back and like leave this behind. Mm-hmm. But his person is like, no, price just went up. You got to do another job. So he's sort of implied to be like, he's trapped in the system. And I felt like that speech and his delivery of it was good. And this is also, I think, another like point to Keanu is he's standing alone on a junk heap. Like he's not interacting with anyone on screen and still able to like bring a lot of emotion to it. So I agree with you, Robin. I think it's a good audition monologue. Although, you know, I don't know what the audition panel's reaction would be, but I would love to see it.
I brought to you a piece from the film Johnny Mnemonic by the great actor Keanu Reeves.
I want room service. Any Keanu knows?
My Keanu, no. He has a lot of clunky lines. Like, you guys mentioned some of his, like, attempts at quips, right? Yeah. But I'm gonna just kind of generally apply it to his teeth exposure.
I'm gonna respond with, how dare you?
Just give it a rest, I think, is what I want to say to him. Like, grimace in a different way. I feel like I saw the same clenched jaw for like 10% of the runtime of this.
Yeah,
film.
It's not just clenched, but like lips receding. Rare.
Oh, it's a four finger jaw clench. Like you could see that's from a two finger smile at Disney World. You could see every single tooth, all of his gums. It's a very dental exam kind of acting.
I thought you meant like when you drink four fingers of whiskey, that's what your teeth will do.
I forget, not everybody knows that two-finger smile thing. And I think I actually talked to my friend Brendan McDonald, who used to work at Disney World. And I was like, is that real? And I think he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. But there's a song about it that I have like internalized in my brain that at Disney World, you have to do a two-finger smile.
Okay. I didn't have a no ready. So that's fine. I was trying to think about one. You know, there were a lot of low moments. I think he did like mumble through some of the, you know, like, I need these frames taken set up.
Yeah.
In that
yeah.
first scene, which was generally wince worthy, but not necessarily Keanu's fault.
Right.
So I'll take a pass without saying more.
All right. Just checking.
Yeah. All right. So who would Charlize play?
If not Jane.
I mean, why not just say Jane? Sometimes the right answer is the obvious answer.
This is true.
Right. She could do it better, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go Jane. I'm debating between Evil Thumbnail, because I like Charlize as a villain, so that could be fun. But I don't want Keanu to have to behead his pal. So I think that I would like her to replace a spider. I think she'd be like a good techie doctor.
Henry Rollins.
Henry Rollins, yeah. Okay, his character's name is Spider. I think she'd be good in that role. And I think then I would like beef up the fight scene between Spider and Robot Jesus.
Okay.
Also, just like Henry Rollins, I know that like it's great that he's in this, but like he's not a good actor.
No, he kind of shouted.
It's very wooden, and I just think that Charlize would like, if you're gonna have Spider be the character that's trying to convince Keanu to like sacrifice himself to save humanity, I think having Academy Award winner Charlize Theron do it, you might he might be more convinced.
Yeah.
But you guys are all going Jane?
I don't know. No, I think Jane is too obvious. I mean, I could see it. It would work well. Some guy's a cool answer. I like that. But the woman who did the Ghost in the Shell.
I was thinking, that's another possibility.
The former leader of a PharmaCorp was just overdone with reverb and the weird British accent.
Yeah.
I think that making that element of the story bigger, I think Charlize could do well.
I think that's
she reminded me of Virginia Madsen in Dune.
Or Janeway. Yeah.
My answer for who Charlize would play would be Jones as a mermaid. As we have mentioned many times on this podcast and our previous podcast, there aren't enough mermaids in movies.
And Charlize has teased us with mermaidism and not been a mermaid. And exactly. So we need to see it.
Right.
I wanted to quickly acknowledge that Jane is a stand-in character for a famous character who was in this original short story called Molly Millions. And Molly Millions is also in the famous William Gibson books, like Neuromancer and those sequels to that. But somebody else owned the rights to that character. So
I was wondering about that.
Maybe she could have a spinoff movie.
I feel like there will always be a cyberpunk movie in development somewhere, and it will always be in development hell because it's hard to make movies about the internet.
Well, I look forward to watching them. I also think having Charlize be a mermaid would be great because another point that I thought was like almost my key Keanu was when he walks in and is pissed off that it's a dolphin. When he's so mad that it's a, he's like, you want me to die with a dolphin connected to my brain. I think it would be very funny to see him interacting. He's like, a mermaid?
Did it ping your facty brain that he keeps calling it a fish?
Well, she corrects him, and so that made me feel better.
Okay, good.
And I feel like I might also, like, in the same way that when we did our Mighty Joe Young episode, it was like I kept calling Joe Young a monkey and then feeling bad about it. Like, I feel like in a heated situation where I was mad that there was a dolphin there, I might call it a fish.
Sorry. I respect that.
Sense. Yep.
So who is your Charlize, Robin?
It's Jane.
Okay.
I'm basic.
Hey, nothing wrong with it.
I think especially with the extension into the Molly character.
Yeah.
Who I think is a lot more interesting than Jane. A little more badass, a little more sure of herself.
Yeah.
I think that tracks well.
A little more Furiosa.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Or Aeon Flux.
Or Trinity.
Or Aeon Flux. Okay, Keanu anew. If they were to remake this movie today, who would Keanu Reeves play this time around?
This is where I say Spider.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. I would have him be Takahashi, the evil person who learns to be good by the end. Although it's a shame because that actor is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's great. He shows up in a lot of things.
Yeah, often in that role.
Yes.
It kind of would be fun to have him replace Johnny's handler, though.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah, the French guy from Blade.
I was wondering, not the bartender. I thought the bartender for a bit, just as a fun little cameo. Mm.
That would be great.
Robot Jesus?
Robot Jesus is where I was going.
Oh, no.
I think, you know, let him get some of that
Constantine energy.
Yeah. I think he'd have a lot of fun in that role.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I think the obvious answer is he would play the same guy. He'd be Johnny Mnemonic again. Mm. I think that is the most likely outcome.
But you'd have to, you know, do it a little bit more down on his luck or a little bit further along in his career because he's still got that I want to get out attitude.
That's true, yeah.
You know who else? He could be Jane. Like, down on his luck, out, needs it, like, he could be the person who aged out of being a bodyguard. I still think I'm going with my original answer, but there are a lot of options here.
Spider sounds pretty satisfying.
You could also play Joe as a merman.
They could do a two-part, they could just be doing the practical effects with Jones together. The flippers and the tail.
What if he just played the internet, and it was just the camera just going real close on his face?
I'm waving my hands and showing my teeth now.
He could do an interpretive dance that is like, this is what the internet
plays
is.
Into your physicality.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or
the black box version of this.
He could, when you jack into the internet, whoever plays Johnny Mnemonic could be Keanu Reeves in internet land.
Mm. Oh, hey.
His avatar.
Like that HBO comedy. Super intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, are we going to give this movie a 1 to 20 rating?
Mm-hmm. We will.
I'll go first because I already have mine scored. I'm going to score this out of 20, 7, because it's not good, but it's not terrible. It's watchable. It's fine. It's not impressive. And I'm ranking it 1 degree below Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Okay, that's good for context.
Yeah.
Trying to get it in context. So Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is
like an 18.
18.
Yeah.
That movie where they start in the airport line. And it's really awkward.
That was a 0.
That was a -12. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I think my answer has to be 320 gigabytes.
Perfect.
I think I might call it 12.
12.
I think it, maybe not as a Keanu movie, but as, you know, as an educational story that captures the spirit of that decade, nice. Give it a 12.
So this is the second time I've seen this movie, because there was a time years ago when Bob and I were just watching movies about the internet as a way to like pick a movie. And so we watched like Hackers and The Net and Sneakers and Johnny Mnemonic. And the first time I watched it, the moment Jones showed up on screen and was a dolphin, I was like losing my mind, because I was like, what are we watching? What is happening? And for a long time after that, Bob and I would constantly say to each other when we had, I don't know, like just like a anything nonsensical thing that we needed to do, we would just say, hey, just loop it through Jones, would you? Like, because I was worked up, guys. I was in a lather the first time I saw this movie. And I don't know if this is just like pandemicness, but when we watched it this time, I was kind of like, there is, of course, a cybernetic dolphin. Okay. Like, it just didn't register at all. And I don't think it's 100% that. I just think that it has, like, there's a first time shock value to watching this that maybe didn't repeat itself for me, but it didn't go like Destination Wedding. Like, this movie doesn't make me angry. Like, I guess, like, my main through line through this is that, like, I'm kind of disappointed in that it could have been a better movie. I think it has some moments that are good. I think Keanu's performance is good. I think this is a movie that people make fun of him for, and whatever, they're wrong. All this to say, I'm going to give it a 6. I'm not, like, it doesn't bubble up. I hope to never watch it again. I hope I don't forget as I did. Like, loop it through Jones was a joke that fell off. I hope that I hold on to that line until I die now. That's my new standing. There's not enough to it that I would like want to rewatch this multiple times. So that's where I stand.
Yeah.
Final answer.
I am going to be the Russian judge. I'm giving it a 4, which I feel is generous. I think this movie is bad, but I also think that if you like watching bad sci-fi movies, you should watch this if you haven't seen it.
That is a good point.
Definitely worth watching, which made me feel like maybe I should give it a higher score, but it's just not good. So I'm giving it a 4.
No, I would have scored it lower, except for I remember the first time watching it that it at least got like a big reaction from me. I was often confused, but I was like, all right, like I'll give it that. Like you said, if you like this kind of movie or Keanu Reeves, sure, watch it. Why not?
And it's 90 minutes. So like it goes fast.
Yeah.
It really does. This is a very lightweight movie.
I watched it 6 years straight. Once a year, around the last day of school before Christmas, I would just turn it on in a sleepy classroom. So I think it had staying power for me. I'm going to stick with my number.
Someday, if we still tweet, when people do the memes of, what's a weird movie you were made to watch in school, people are going to say, Mr. David made me watch Johnny Mnemonic.
What was the movie that you were made to watch in high school?
The one that I always think of is Conrack, starring John Voight as Pat Conroy. I don't know why we watched that in school, but we sure did.
For me, it was Gattaca.
Yep.
Which we watched.
We watched Gattaca in school, but that makes sense.
Well, here's the thing. I watched it in biology class. Sure, that makes sense. But also in band?
No, okay, that's just filler.
Our music teacher was definitely like, I just borrowed this from the biology teacher. Leave me alone.
We watched Babe in band because the guy was like, I really like the music in this movie. Let's watch this movie. And I was like,
we also watched multiple times the Robert Redford Great Gatsby.
The guy from Sneakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's the other set of movies that I would show to my kids was Hackers, Sneakers, and Johnny Mnemonic. That was my trio.
Nice.
So
all good internet movies.
Solid. All with different lessons to take home.
Exactly.
Yeah, The Net is the right-wing interpretation of information, and Hackers is the left-wing interpretation.
Yep.
And Johnny Mnemonic is...
weird.
Somewhere
to the fantasy interpretation.
Bob's doing math.
We have an average score of 7.
Yeah. Punched it up to my 12.
Thank you so much for listening. David, thank you so much for joining us and bringing your cyberpunk expertise and regular cyber expertise to the podcast. It was very, very... This is the longest conversation we've ever had, which is nice.
It is.
A true pleasure.
I think our previous longest conversation was, your house is really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, and I ran away to chase a child, I'm sure.
Thank you, Alex Reed, for our amazing theme song.
Thank you to my co-hosts.
And thank you to our listeners. And most importantly,
thank you, Keanu. This brie is so good. It's fondue with cheese. We're gonna eat it all up while we
we talk about Keanu Reeves.